In 2020, our first episode of DIA Connections was about fentanyl. What we heard was shocking.
If you can imagine an airliner falling out of the sky every other day, that's about how many people die from fentanyl.
According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, in 2023 alone, 107,543 people died from an overdose. An estimated 74,000 of those were attributed to synthetic opioids, such as fentanyl. We didn't think we'd be doing another show about it, and although recently there's been a slight decrease in the number of deaths, it's still an unacceptable number. The U.S. Senate Committee on Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs thought so too.
Good morning, Chairman Brown, ranking member.
That's why on January 11th, 2024, the committee held hearings about the fentanyl crisis in America.
Anything that we can do as a body to make common sense reforms and to stop the cash flow that funds fentanyl is absolutely essential that we get it done right now.
The hearing was called Stopping the Flow of Fentanyl, Public Awareness and Legislative Solutions. Under normal circumstances, it may not have received a lot of attention, but this one did. And it was because a powerful speech went viral.
My name is Jason D4, but to most I am known as Jelly Roll.
If you don't know Jelly Roll, that's okay. We'll fill you in.
My name is Jason Jelly Roll D4, and I'm from Nashville, Tennessee. This is an honor, man. This is unbelievable.
Jelly Roll has emerged as a force to be reckoned with in the music industry.
And the CMA Award for New Artist of the Year goes to Jelly Roll!
Awards, chart-topping hits, and Grammy nominations. It's truly an unlikely success story, because fame and fortune didn't happen for Jelly Roll until his late 30s. That's not the average age of stardom in the music biz.
Thank y'all so much, and thank you, Billboard. It's been an incredible year.
And the reason that he's a late bloomer was the reason for his testimony on the Hill.
I stand here as a regular member of society. I am a stupid songwriter, y'all, but I have firsthand witnessed this in a way most people have not.
Starting as a teenager and into his mid-20s, he was in and out of prison for drug-related charges. Becoming a country music star wasn't even a dream, because he was living life as a drug addict. Cocaine, acid, and meth was his nightmare.
I was a part of the problem. I am here now standing as a man that wants to be a part of the solution. I brought my community down. I hurt people. I was the uneducated man in the kitchen playing chemist with drugs I knew absolutely nothing about, just like these drug dealers are doing right now when they're mixing every drug on the market with fentanyl, and they're killing the people we love.
His testimony was deeply personal. He described why in vivid detail.
I've attended more funerals than I care to share with y'all. This committee, I could sit here and cry for days about the caskets I've carried of people I loved dearly, deeply, in my soul, good people. Not just drug addicts. Uncles, friends, cousins, normal people. At every concert I perform, I witness the heartbreaking impact of fentanyl. I see fans grappling with this tragedy in the form of music that they seek solace in music and hope that their experiences won't befall others. They crave reassurance. These are the people I'm here to speak for, y'all.
The Committee on Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs plays an integral role in managing legislation that affects the lives of many Americans. And fentanyl has taken the lives of many Americans. And it's been that way for a long time.
Fentanyl transcends partisanship and ideology, gentlemen and women. This is a totally different problem.
This is DIA Connections.
The DEA calling it the deadliest drug our nation has ever faced.
Never take a pill that's not prescribed to you. Never take a pill from a friend. And never take a pill bought on social media.
There's a heavy military presence, but the cartel is thriving thanks to a new product, fentanyl. And it's one of the most deadly drugs the world has seen.
Thanks for joining us. We're calling this episode The Fentanyl Fight. In April 2024, President Biden signed into law the Fend Off Fentanyl Act. That's what Jelly Roll's testimony was all about. For this episode, we spoke with people who, like Jelly Roll, are fighting fentanyl the best way they know how. Mariana Van Zeller is an investigative reporter covering the cartel and the black market underworld.
We were there on the ground in Sinaloa interviewing a cartel member who actually worked for El Mayo, the kingpin that was just brought to the United States. And he told us how they had paid a Colombian chemist to come to Sinaloa, and they paid him $40,000 to teach them how to make fentanyl.
Dr. Barry Zuloff is a DIA intelligence officer for counter-narcotics, organized crime, and threat finance.
They have ways of figuring out how to put that cash into the banking system without drawing attention. The center of gravity is the money. So we have the special part of ATTC that looks at threat finance, where the money comes from.
Donna McCauley's daughter, Amanda, was one of fentanyl's victims.
They actually explained it as a speck of fentanyl, and that's all she had in her. She just did a tiny, tiny bit, and it was enough to kill her.
The Defense Intelligence Agency tries to stop the flow of fentanyl entering the United States by trying to stop the flow of cartel money. The Americas and Transregional Threat Center, or ATTC, is the office at DIA with that monumental task.
So, Barry, thanks so much for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
DIA historian Paul Isaacson sat down with senior intelligence officer Dr. Barry Zuloff to discuss it. Barry began by giving us an overview on fentanyl.
It's a narcotic manufactured synthetically, meaning that it doesn't grow like heroin, which comes from opium poppy, or cocaine that comes from coca leaves. Fentanyl is so toxic, sometimes it's left as residue in a bed and breakfast, and people get in contact with the dust. They don't intend to do that, and they get poisoned. Fentanyl can be hidden in what appear to be ordinary over-the-counter medication, Xanax or whatever the case may be. If you buy Adderall as a high school kid, you want certain effects. You're not wanting to buy a 10 times poisonous dose of fentanyl. They think they're taking a, quote, safe drug, close quote, and it's laced with fentanyl or it has fentanyl added into it somehow and at levels that are so poisonous that it kills them. Imagine a packet of sugar. That's a couple of grams. That's 500 deadly doses. That's enough to kill 500 people.
So no wonder people are making mistakes.
Yes.
And killing themselves or killing somebody else by leaving some residue on a table.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, I've been in drug law enforcement for 30 years, and I can't believe what I'm about to say. There are people who can manage their lives for a brief period of time using cocaine, using heroin. You end up doing such damage to your heart and to your circulatory system and to your brain that you can't do it forever, but you can manage it. Fentanyl is not manageable. It's just not. It's so deadly.
What makes this fentanyl problem a national security issue for the United States?
The scale of the destruction that fentanyl represents and how it's brought into this country is so clearly a threat to the national security of the United States that it needs to be thought of as such. It's smuggled into the United States by cartels based out of Mexico, and it's manufactured from chemicals smuggled from China.
What is DIA's role in addressing this issue? Is DIA trying to stop it? Are we trying to monitor it? Are we trying to help somebody else stop it?
I have three areas of responsibility. Counter-narcotics, which mostly means fentanyl. Organized crime, which these days mostly means the cartels. And threat finance, which means the money that supports all of those activities.
So tell us more about that threat finance mission. The money, follow the money?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, follow the money. That's one of our mantras. So we have a special part of ATTC that looks at threat finance, where the money comes from. The cartels don't have a political agenda. They don't want to overthrow Mexico. They don't want to overthrow the United States. They want to make money. They're the quintessential capitalists in this world. Everything that they do is to make money. If it doesn't make the money, they won't do it. They produce so many piles of cash that they don't even typically bother to count it. They weigh it. They need to move that someplace where they can take advantage of it. They have ways of figuring out how to put that cash into the banking system without drawing attention. What our threat finance people do is they look at ways to do things like money laundering, finding a business that operates on a cash basis, a nail salon, a car wash, anything like that.
I'm having Breaking Bad flashbacks with the whole money laundering and the car wash. I'm going to Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad's a fairly a dramatized but pretty accurate portrayal of how this all works. So if we can take the money away, that's really the way to get at the organizations. That causes real harm to the cartels.
Cartels rely on precursor chemicals to make fentanyl. China is where the supply chain starts. It's also where Ben Westhoff went to see for himself. His book, Fentanyl Inc., is a deep dive investigation of the illicit industry. He joined us on the first DIA Connections show we did about fentanyl. Westhoff went undercover and infiltrated a Chinese synthetic drug operation and secretly recorded visits to their labs. He shared that audio with us.
Okay, yeah, those are some giant tubes. Okay, so how long have you had the lab? How many years?
5 years.
5 years, okay.
It was very nerve-wracking. I guess what I took a little bit of comfort in was the fact that these aren't cartels that are operating the synthetic drug trade in China. It's not like Colombia or Mexico. These are businessmen, and they want to make money. So they're not killing people. There aren't bodies in the streets. They don't have guns, even. They kind of look like basic science nerds.
It's a building. It's a new, seems new, fairly new. So how do you have many people working here? Only four.
The quantity of drugs they're making was huge, and they showed me all these baggies that they had ready to ship out in 1 kilo quantities, which is a huge amount. It was very kind of like a Breaking Bad sort of moment to see all this industrial sized glassware. It's not actually the fentanyl itself that's the biggest problem. It's the fentanyl precursors, because they sell these by the boatload to the Mexican cartels. And the Mexican cartels don't have the trained chemists to make fentanyl from scratch. And so they depend on China for these precursor ingredients. They receive them and they turn it into finished fentanyl.
Since 2019, when Mexico overtook China to become the dominant supplier of fentanyl in the United States, cartels have been flooding the country with the synthetic opioid. Our next guest has seen that aspect of the illegal drug industry up close.
My name is Mariana Van Zeller, and I'm the correspondent and executive producer of Trafficked on National Geographic.
Trafficked, with Peabody Award-winning journalist Mariana Van Zeller, is a multiple Emmy award-winning documentary series that explores the complex and dangerous inner workings of the global underworld.
You say something is off bounds, and that's exactly where you want to go.
The show's mission is to follow the chain of custody of trafficked goods. Viewers see a 360-degree view of the trafficking world from the vantage point of smugglers and law enforcement. And it's risky business.
Our first stop is to meet with an operative known as the Commander, who controls smuggling routes for the clan, granting safe passage to those who pay the cartel, and punishment for those who don't.
In a few minutes, you'll hear her encounter with cartel chemists as they concoct pills laced with fentanyl headed for the United States. Mariana, thank you for joining us. I want to begin by asking you to tell us about the show Trafficked and to explain your role. Because you're not really trying to catch the traffickers and have them arrested, right?
That's not my job as a journalist. That's correct. Trafficked is a show about black markets. I think most people don't know, but black and gray markets actually make up for over a third of the world's economy. It's what economists call the hidden third.
From Mexico's cartel country to the border and into American communities, I'm going deep inside the fentanyl pipeline to see exactly how it's fueling the most devastating drug epidemic in U.S. history.
So the work that I do on Trafficked is to explore these undergrounds, these black markets, these hidden worlds that people know very little about and yet have an enormous impact on our lives.
The people that you deal with are involved in all kinds of illegal activities, but you want to tell their story. Why? Why do that?
I think that is the most important question for me as a journalist always, is the why. Why do you do what you do? And I think that what I've learned is that in many cases, it is a lack of opportunities. It is a lack of jobs. People's choices are only as good as the options they're given. And why is that important? Why is it important to know why a person became a drug dealer or a gun smuggler or a human trafficker? Because without understanding people's motivations, we will never be able to get to the root cause of these problems and prevent or stop these black markets from existing.
Tell us what we don't understand about this world and about the black markets.
Most people tend to look at the world as very black and white, as us versus them. And to be able to spend time with some of the operators in these black markets and actually find a human connection and find human beings that are very similar to you and I think will shock and surprise most people.
Watching Mariana put herself into perilous situations is not for the faint of heart.
Oh, this is so crazy. Like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 armed guys, right, walking right towards us.
Trafficking guns, stolen cars, animals, human body parts, and drugs is just a short list of the shows that they've done. It can take years to produce one story, and it requires a tremendous amount of access. Mariana, why do traffickers and smugglers expose their world to you? I know that you mask their faces and you distort their voices, but they still take a risk by talking with you. Why do they do that?
I think that people talk to us for three main reasons. I think it's ego. A lot of times people do what they do. They're very passionate about what they do. Sometimes they're the best of the best at doing what they do, and not even their families know they do it. Second, I think it's impunity. In a lot of places, in many areas in Brazil, in Sinaloa, Mexico, where there's police corruption and government corruption, and they really don't see a downside to talking to a well-recognized channel like National Geographic and trusted channel like National Geographic. A lot of them have seen my work as well, so they trust me. And I think the last and most important reason is a very human characteristic that we all share of wanting to be understood.
You've spent several years reporting on this part of society that we don't see. I'm wondering if there's been a story or maybe someone that really made an impression on you.
You know, when I spend time with a kid who is taking 50 pounds of cocaine on his back, and he's a 16-year-old kid, and for a whole week up and down the Andes in Peru, and he's putting his life in danger. He's seen his friends being killed in front of him. I mean, it's incredibly backbreaking and dangerous work. And when I ask him, you know, but why do you do it? Why risk your life? And he tells me, look, I've always wanted to be a dentist. It's my dream to be a dentist, but I can't afford college and my family is very poor. And so the only way, the only job that gives me the opportunity to one day go to college is this one. And I asked him, why do you want to be a dentist? And he said, because in my little town, all the ads of dentists are people smiling. And so I want to make people smile and happy. I mean, how can you not connect on a very human level with people like this?
Let's talk specifically about fentanyl. When did you first start to hear about it?
In 2016. This was before Prince died of a fentanyl overdose. It was before it was a household name. And I started telling my editor at the time, look, we have to do a story about this drug. And the consensus at the time was like, nobody knows what fentanyl is. I mean, I'm sorry, but it's not a big deal. And eventually I convinced him.
4 years later, Mariana did a Trafficked episode about fentanyl and went to the production hub in Sinaloa, Mexico.
I'm in the Sinaloan countryside. I can't disclose where exactly. In an underground lab with a cartel chemist who's perfecting his latest shipment of fentanyl.
We got access to our first fentanyl lab, something that I tried very hard for many years to get access to, and it was unbelievable.
Ponemos las máscaras ahorita?
Sí, yo.
Ahorita. Okay, everybody, we should put the masks on. This is where it starts getting dangerous here.
Can you describe what was happening in that underground lab?
So I'm wearing a gas mask. This guy is wearing like one of those regular COVID masks. I mean, nothing very professional, nothing like ours. Ours was a full face mask.
Like a veteran chef, the chemist tells me his mixtures aren't entirely based on careful measurements, but his own physiological reactions to the chemical process.
And he's telling me that the way he knows that the fentanyl is strong, if it's good or not, is by how it reacts. Basically, it comes in through his pores, the fumes, because you can really, I mean, even with the mask, you could sort of smell. It's like super heavy, toxic air.
I'm starting to think my team and I should get the hell out of here. Outlaw narco-chemists accidentally kill themselves all the time.
This is so nuts.
And he could tell that his heart rate would go up just from the fumes, just from it being in the air. And that's how he knows it's good stuff.
Pharmaceutical pill pressing machines create thousands of pills a day that look like legitimate prescription medication, like oxycodone, Xanax, and Adderall. Therein lies the danger when the pills are smuggled into the States. Mariana, you follow the path of these killer pills as they're smuggled by couriers from Mexico into the U.S. But this must be incredibly hard for you, because you know this is not going to end well for someone somewhere.
Absolutely. This was one of the most, the moments that I felt most conflicted as my job as a journalist. I have spent a lot of my time reporting on opiate crisis with family members, particularly mothers who've lost their loved ones, who lost their kids. And I am a mother myself. There is never a more emotional interview than interviewing a mother who's lost their child. These are interviews and stories that will stay with me forever. And so the moments that I am filming this woman as she's crossing the border into the United States with 5 kilos of fentanyl was incredibly hard for me. And it's one of those moments that I couldn't stop but think about if the mothers who'd been victims were seeing me at this moment, how would they judge me? And at the end of the day, I think that the work that I do stands to make much more of an impact and a difference if it's raising awareness in general about how these things make it into the United States than it is to denounce this one person. It is not my job as a journalist to denounce this one person. It is my job as a journalist to raise awareness and hope that my work has some sort of an impact. But it was incredibly difficult for me. I showed my reporting to some of those mothers because I wanted to see what they felt and how they thought, what they thought about that. I was very happy to know they shared my instinct. They shared the idea that they want to stop this from happening to other people. And in order to do that, you have to understand the whole picture.
The leading cause of death for Americans aged 18 to 45 is fentanyl overdose. Amanda McCauley was someone who fit into that category. She was 27 when she died from street-laced fentanyl. We'd like to tell you her story with the help of her mother, Donna.
Well, my Amanda, she was a very unique girl. She was full of life and she had a great personality. I constantly try not to forget her laugh. She had this very unique laugh that I miss. So I try to actually do it myself all the time because I don't want to forget her laugh. It was this real weird, she did this weird laugh that it was just, you just laughed at her laugh, you know.
In high school, Amanda was on the swim, tennis, and cheerleading teams. She also won an Ohio Top Teen Modeling Contest, and she had a passion for acting.
She really loved the acting. I got her acting lessons, private lessons, and she loved when she had to cry because she could immediately cry. I always said, "How can you do that?" And she could just cry in an instant. She just was a natural.
After graduating high school, Amanda left her small town in Ohio to pursue acting opportunities in Los Angeles. But that's not what she found.
They were passing out Xanax that were laced with fentanyl. She didn't know that there was fentanyl in there until she had already gotten addicted to it.
Her life was on a downward spiral, and her mom brought her back home and checked her into clinic after clinic.
It changed her. She told her dad, she said, "Dad, I don't think I could get off this. I don't think I could beat it. It's just consuming me. It's in my head, and it won't leave."
The day after Amanda spoke with her father, Donna's other daughter saw Amanda on the living room couch.
It was early, I want to say 6:30, and she saw Amanda. She's like, "Amanda, are you okay?" And she screamed. She screamed so loud. And I knew she was gone. I didn't even come downstairs because I didn't want to see her like that.
Thousands of parents know that agonizing pain. Remarkably, while suffering from an unimaginable loss, Donna found the strength to launch a crusade to fight fentanyl's destruction.
I know that we could get to the kids and change the mindset of kids.
She's organized walkathons and fundraisers to raise awareness, and she's even producing a play about Amanda's life.
The play can get into the schools where the high school students can perform it for the younger kids, and they could show what the life on drugs, what they do to you and how it destroys you.
Then there are the giant billboards, 10 of them strategically located in and around Amanda's hometown.
You've probably noticed this billboard if you're driving through downtown Youngstown or throughout Mahoning County. It says, "Don't use the F word. Fentanyl is fatal." A Poland mother once...
The billboards have a larger-than-life photograph of Amanda. Donna told us her beauty will help save lives.
Maybe this is her gift. This is what she's going to do. She's going to do it in heaven. She's going to save those kids that she loves. It's an attention grabber, and it worked. One child, 15 years old, doesn't know what fentanyl is. He saw the billboard and said to his mom, and he said, "Don't use the F word." He said, "What is fentanyl?" And she said, "I don't know. Let's go home and look it up." And I thought, you know what? Then it's working, because a 15-year-old should know what fentanyl is.
Earlier in the show, you heard from Dr. Barry Zuloff. He's an intelligence officer with DIA's Americas and Transregional Threat Center, also known as the ATTC. Here's a final thought he shared with historian Paul Isaacson about the critical need at the Defense Intelligence Agency to continue the fentanyl fight.
Barry, when people think of DIA, I think they think of counting numbers, the numbers of tanks, or they think we're going to be studying intercontinental ballistic missiles and what their range is and their accuracy and so on. But I think what's interesting about this fentanyl and this counter-drug effort is the variety of disciplines that go into this effort that is so critical, right? I mean, understanding networks, politics, understanding finance, understanding chemistry. It's an interesting aspect of this that we need lots of different skills for this, right? Tell us about that.
We need, for example, people who have a financial background, who are interested in following the money, who can understand everything from Bitcoin to money laundering. We have room for people who are interested in organizational attack. Maybe they've grown up doing law enforcement. Maybe they've grown up in the counterterrorism realm. It's the same kind of skills that we need to be able to illuminate what the drug cartels and the entire organization look like. We need scientists who understand organic chemistry. We need people who understand international relations as well. It's probably the widest possible range of skills that we can make use of in ATTC to be part of the solution.
To learn more about the Defense Intelligence Agency, please go to DIA.mil. As always, thanks for listening to DIA Connections.